This is Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Sumich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number three, Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Matt Brown and Mike Sumich, thanks for being with us here last couple hours. Got one more to go for you as we get you ready for the sports to come. Talk about the sports that are already going out there. Any bets we have in our accounts, any bets to come. It is over for Scottie Scheffler. He bogeys eight, so any miracle comeback for him, Mike, that's going to do it. He falls back to plus four. So if anybody was riding a massive Scottie ticket to make a miracle comeback over the weekend, he needed to go clean today. He needed to probably go clean tomorrow as well. I do think there's a chance that one, two, maybe even three of all the Byrne, Spawn, Hovland group could come back down to earth here, but he's still four strokes off. Even if Burns came back to even par today, Miami, he's still four behind Burns at that point, now that he's fallen to plus four. So I think that probably does it for Scottie Scheffler.
Yet all that being said, he is 7-1 in the live market, Matt. Your third pick.
There's no way. No way.
That's what I'm seeing right now.
That's no way. Scheffler, where is he? There's just no, okay, 14-1 at DraftKings. Okay, I was gonna say.
Well, he must have just dropped that.
Okay, yeah. I was gonna say
12-1. 12-1 on DraftKings, your fifth pick. Yeah. So with all that being said, still your fifth choice on the board.
Well, he was. Yeah, I mean, he was at 14 when I flipped it over. So some people took the 14. Good on you, I guess.
I mean, it just tells you. Yeah. I don't disagree with you. He had to be clean. He doesn't have a ton of time left. I think plus one might win this tournament, Matt. I really think that we might see someone over par win it, which means that his plus four, not that far out of it. And I think that's why you're seeing people play some of these guys at plus four, plus five with a little more pedigree, because there's not a lot of pedigree at the top of the board and it's a very difficult course.
Yeah, it's, I just, again, I mean, if anyone can do it, Scottie Scheffler can, but he's only got 10 holes left today. And then, as he said, seven back currently. And I understand that. And I say currently because, you know, Sam Burns is yet to go. And so he might,
right.
He could go five over today. We have, like you said, there are more people five over or worse today than there are at even par, you know? So it's not out of the realm of possibility for sure.
I just think it's wild that he's sitting seven back right now with 10 holes left on a Saturday. And you're still seeing him sitting there at 12-1. You can get Ben Griffin, who's yet to tee off, tied for fourth at even par, three back at a 11-1 price. So just slightly better. I mean, it's just wild how much he gets bet in the market.
Now, you and I said for sure we would shoot 120, 130 on this course, like no doubt. But we did have a 12 over today by Cam Davis, which makes you feel a little warm and fuzzy inside that, like, you know, it can happen even to the very best out there. Bogey, double, par, par. Now, he did birdie, number five. Par, 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 triple. Double, bogey, 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 par, par, bogey, par. So there's your 12 over round from Cam Davis. He made the cut. He's going to get paid. But hey, listen, it's a very tough course and golf is a hard game, you know? So if things aren't going right and you mix in a really tough course on top of that, Mike, you can end up with a 12 over even if you're a professional golfer.
Well, I love his back nine because 17 playing the easiest hole in the course right now, the 10 through 14 gettable. He doubles 10, bogeys 11, 12, 13, 14, and 17, and he pars the hardest three holes on the back nine, but bogeys all of the ones that people are scoring on. It's tough out there, Matt. It's tough out there.
For those just joining us here, some games that'll be going here in a little while. Sumich is on the first five over in the Rockies and the Braves. I like the Astros as dogs today with Hunter Brown on the hill. Like I said, 31.1% K rate on the season, Mike. I mean, that is just absolutely ridiculous.
Filthy.
Yeah, just guys just got it going. And the other thing is, like, Rodon, who I took in the Bet the Cycle, actually has a higher swinging strike rate on the season. He's right there with Hunter Brown. Rodon has been fantastic as well. But I like the Astros bullpen. I think the Twins bullpen, one of the worst in the bigs. That's why I played the full game here on the Astros, because I'll go ahead and take my chances with the Twins bullpen should it come to that as well. You played just the over strikeouts there in that one to play into that big K rate that he's got. And then the Cardinals and the Brewers first five for you, backing Jose Quintana there going up against this Cardinals lineup that hit sometimes but doesn't hit consistently.
No, they don't hit consistently, and Quintana have been very good against the projected lineup for the Cardinals as well. So I think it's a good spot to take take a Brewers team that plays very well at home. And do love that Hunter Brown over 7.5 Ks plus 130. Like that one quite a bit. I think he's going to have some success against the Twins lineup that doesn't mind striking out.
Game 5 tonight, Florida and Edmonton up in Edmonton. This is, man, is it a coin flip literally everywhere?
Yep, literally everywhere, coin flip right now.
It is 110 on both sides everywhere in the market. 6.5, your prevailing total with a little bit of juice depending on what book towards either an over or an under. So it all just depends on kind of where that is sitting right now. But a 6.5 is the total in coin flip on the sides here. Mike, I know we've already talked some hockey here. A couple of different segments, but how do you like the Panthers? How do you like the Oilers? How do you like this series headed back up to Edmonton?
I think this is going to be a phenomenal hockey game. I mean, it's been a phenomenal series so far in the first four. The switch to Picard, I think, is very interesting. They pulled Skinner earlier. Picard came in, played very well for them, then got hurt. And so they went back to Skinner, who then played well and kept the position in net. We saw Picard play well in the third period and in overtime against this Panthers team in game four. I'm not sure that that was more of just the moment. Right now that you know Picard's in net, you're going to go through, okay, how do we attack him from a shot perspective? Where is weakness? High glove, high blocker. Where do we want to attack? And I, just the pace of these games makes me want to keep playing the over. When we came on the show, we talked about this over being minus 102, even plus 100 in some places. Now we're seeing the money come in on the over all the way up to minus 112. Over's 4-0 in this series. I bet the over again tonight. I don't really have a side lean here, Matt. I think this game could absolutely go either way. We might see another overtime game here, but I do expect you're going to see goals based on the way the pace we've seen from these previous three games. The fact these teams hate each other and they're willing to take penalties over it. And when you see that many power plays, you're going to see power play goals. Do like Ekblad over a shot and a half tonight as well. He's played 17 games in these playoffs, has 34 shots on goal. So averaging 2 shots. But the key to me here is that Ekblad has all of a sudden started playing more and more power play time for this Florida team. And if he's on power play one, he's going to have more shot opportunities to get one through from the point. So give me Ekblad over a shot and a half on goal tonight as well, Matt.
Edmonton, known as Canada's festival city, hosting over 50 festivals annually up there in Edmonton. And Mike, during the summer, can get up to 17 hours of daylight in a single day. Sign me up for that. Give me 17 hours of daylight, buddy. I'm in on that.
That's not bad. It's probably right around now too. We're right around the summer solstice. So you take a trip to Edmonton for game 7, if it goes that deep, Matt, and you could see a bunch of sunlight.
The West Edmonton Mall was once the largest mall in the world. It is no longer the largest mall in the world, but it is the largest mall in North America. So you could head up there to the West Edmonton Mall. It does have, however, the world's largest indoor roller coaster, which is a triple loop roller coaster called the Mindbender that is located right there inside the West Edmonton Mall.
What's up, Mall of America? What are we doing? Well, I thought Mall of America had the biggest roller coaster and had the biggest mall. I mean, come on, Edmonton outpacing Minneapolis here.
Yeah, I mean, I actually never even heard of the West Edmonton Mall. So this is
no,
something.
Neither have I. No,
this is some, if it's the largest mall in North America, like this should be, you should be screaming this from a mountaintop.
Well, if we have anyone who is from Canada or lives in Canada currently watching or listening out there, tweet at us, because the Mall of America is a thing in America. People talk about the Mall of America because it was the biggest mall in America, had this roller coaster, it was in Mighty Ducks 2, all of this jazz, right? Do people talk about the West Edmonton Mall in Canada like it's a big deal, or is this just a kind of an afterthought? I'd love to know from any Canadians out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking here at just like fun facts about Edmonton, and like, you know, they've got a neon sign museum up there that you can go and you can check out. Apparently it's very easy to see a bunch of bison. There's just bison all over the place, so you can go check that out.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is it is home to arguably the best bakery in Canada, so there you have that as well.
Who knew? that seems a little loose, let's be honest.
Like, no,
anywhere could be arguably the best bakery in anywhere, right?
Well, I guess if you're arguing, that's true. I mean, it right, literally says exactly, arguably in the thing. So yes, anyone could argue about any of the bakeries. Marlins and the Nationals. We're heading to the top of the eighth inning there. The Marlins up 3-1 on the Nats. They have 9 hits in this game to just 4 by the Nationals. As we alluded to a little bit earlier, Reds all over the Tigers here in this one. 7-1 in favor of the Reds over the Tigers. And Mike, you don't have to look very far to see what went wrong here, because those seven runs come on only eight hits, but Flaherty walked five in this one. And when he walked five, the hits he gave up left the yard. He gave away three homers in this one too. So when you walk people and you give up the long ball, the numbers can rack up quickly.
Not a good combination, because those become free runs there. So you can't really walk people and then give up homers. 1-1 right now in the top of the fourth inning for the Pirates and the Cubs. This might be the game where I am upset with myself for not betting the under, Matt. We talked about it with the wind blowing in. I didn't do it because of the price. It felt like it was baked in, but here we are sitting at 1-1, looking like especially the first five under, which you talked about at 4.
Yeah, I mean, Burrows has given up three hits for the Pirates side of things, but he struck out four Cubs already. Mm-hmm. I mean, not bad
Boyd,
there. Only
Boyd
one
just
hit.
One hit. Yeah. Home run for McCutcheon.
Yeah, just one hit given up by Boyd, but that one did leave the yard. So that's why we're sitting at 1-1 there in that one. So, you know, look, I think if you – I understand the handicap might, but look, we say this all the time. A lot of baseball left to go there in that one. So maybe you won't feel bad about what happens when it's all
Thanks,
said
Matt.
And done. Guys, we talk about Sharp Plays. Head on over to Sharp Plays. They have an AI, cutting edge AI over there, so you can see what the bets look like over on the site. You can get the free betting reports, real-time alerts, and the insights delivered to you right in your email box or even over on the X. So be sure and check out sharpplays.com today.
Set Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready Set Bet here on VSiN. Matt Brown, Mike Somich. Still waiting on some of these guys to get going over the U.S. Open. Sam Stevens, 2-under through 6. Thomas Dietrich, 1-under through 2. Keep it going. Hashtag bet added sometime along the, you know, in their tournament. So let's keep that going, buddy. Bob McIntyre, 2-under through 11. Colin Morikawa, 2-under through 7. Carlos Ortiz is 1-under through 5. Jordan Spieth, 2-under through 12 to get to +3 on the day. And another bogey there for Trevor Cohn. That's a shame. That's a shame. Another bogey for him, Mike.
He's 1-under.
Yeah, that's fine.
But he's still 1-under for the round.
Yeah,
he bogeyed. You've got over 76. You need him to shoot 6 over.
No, 75 and a half. Yeah.
Yeah, you need him to shoot 6 over. He's 1-under with 7 holes left.
Listen, I feel good about my position.
I will be taking a Casamigos Blanco on the rocks.
I feel good about my position, man. That's where we're going with this one for sure. All right, now joining us here on the program, Michael Fiddle. You can find his work over on the Action Network at FiddlePix over on the Twitter machine as well. Michael, appreciate the time today.
Of course. Happy to come on. We got some great NBA basketball as we head towards the finals, 2-2, going game 5, and WNBA rolls on, which has been efficient to start the year in terms of market angles, grabbing CLV, and having some winning bets.
I like it. We will definitely talk some WNBA with you here in just a second, but want to get your thoughts on 9.5 across the market out there right now. Not a single shop is differing from that number. So 9.5 in favor of Oklahoma City at home. 223 to 223.5 is our total here in this one. Felt to me, said this earlier in the show, felt like Indiana letting that one get away is going to end up just being the end of it for me in this one. I think OKC just rolls at this point. I think you are of the like mindset here that maybe OKC gets back home and gets back on track.
Yeah, I've always had OKC as the strongly power rated team, and even at these long numbers was going to have some value against the spread. So despite it being a 2-2 series, I actually think this game 5 might be one of the best buy points that we've had on the Oklahoma City Thunder at home as a -9.5 consensus. Like you said, Matt, we look towards what games 1 and 2 were, where we have information about how the market moved and how the line closed when we were in Oklahoma. And we saw late steam from 9.5 to close at 10, 10.5 for game 1, and game 2 closed at -11.5, -115. So a pricey 11.5 factoring in that zigzag factor. So we don't have that desperation angle as much, but we certainly should have a raucous OKC environment. They've been the best home court advantage, and therefore I think this is still a desperation spot because it's 2-2 and not 3-1 of any capacity. So I'm totally going back in on Oklahoma City Thunder -9.5. And in the total, there's been a move towards the under throughout this series that I think it's probably time to go the other way.
Yeah, I think it's been interesting to see that total dip down. We opened as high as 228 in this series. We're now sitting at 223.5, 224 in some places. I lean more toward the under, but I almost kind of like the Thunder team total over if I'm going to take a side specifically on a team total perspective. What's your take on the team total sides here? Is there anything that's worth playing?
Yeah, I completely agree, Mike. This is a spot where I'm going Oklahoma City team total towards the over here. I'm going to fade Indiana having that hot shooting again. But if we look towards the last two games that have been under spots, and there have been some late market moves towards the under in game three, back towards the over in game four. So we really found like the market was settling between 226 and 228.5. And it feels like too much of a reaction to the way games three and four ended in the fourth quarter where the offense totally stalled. If you looked at the pace projections after quarter threes in the last two games, you would have projected both to go over. So the fact that it ended slow and went under, I'm willing to fade that now, saying the market's now at 223.5. It even opened for this game five at 222.5 and has ticked up a little bit once it reached that consensus point. So I do think there is some sentiment to saying, nah, it's gone a little too far. We understand the defense is tightening up. The rotations are starting to get to know each other. The tendencies makes it easier to play defense over the course of a series. That being said, these are two of the top three teams in pace in the league, and they've been projected towards the over until some weak fourth quarter efficiency. So 2.5 points lower than it should be, in my opinion. It should bounce back up to about 226.
Talking to Michael Fiddle, Action Network, at Fiddle Picks over on the Twitter machine. SGA heads back home. Through the first four games, he's played 40, 36, 42, and 40 minutes in these four games. Any thoughts on props for SGA?
Yeah, I would go look towards his over. Everyone was on the unders, which included me in some of these spots in Indiana, and he really came through. MVP caliber performance. Very headstrong to go on his own 7-0 run during the fourth quarter to really nail down the comeback, secure the win for Oklahoma City, a clutch three. But the difference here was that the way that Mark Dagnall called a timeout with about 4 minutes left and then used some multiple switches. He used two different switches consistently on plays, and that allowed SGA to isolate on Aaron Nesmith instead of being put against Andrew Nembhard. And so that allowed SGA to start getting his groove, and was released from the lock and the jail that Nembhard has kept him in. And he actually started to find his rhythm, find his way to the paint. He'll have those outlets around him. And they also started playing double bigs and pairing SGA's minutes with Hartenstein. And that's a key thing because Hartenstein is the best screener that SGA's ever played with. And he cuts for those lob dunks. So a lot of SGA's assist opportunities haven't been there over the last game or two because of the pairings. And I felt like it's going to come back in game five. So I think the scoring output, of course, will be there. And I think the assist opportunity should be there as well for SGA. So I like his over 45.5 points, rebounds, and assists.
Yeah, back up at 34.5 again on the points side. The over RPA there, 45.5. That's the direction that you'd prefer to go in that spot. You have another prop play tomorrow, specifically looking on the Pacers side. I thought the rebounding has been very interesting in this series and how the Pacers dominated game one on the glass, but then we have not seen that same dominance. Who do you think has success here in game five on the boards for the Pacers?
So I think you have to just pick off the Siakam 6.5s that are on the market. There are 6.5s, there are 7.5s, and all of those 6.5s are bound to move towards the over. This is really just a volume play. Rebounding has been such a key focus in this series because both of these teams emphasize possessions and winning the amount of shots. So rebounds, direct correlation to amount of possessions gained and stopping your opponent from getting an extra chance. So Siakam over 6.5, he's just going to play close to 38, 40 minutes. He's going to be out there. They're playing very limited amount of Thomas Bryant minutes. Miles Turner has been dealing with the sickness. I understand Obi Toppin has been a steady presence to play alongside Siakam, but we really just seen Siakam need to initiate as a rebounder, as someone to crash the offensive glass as well. So love Siakam over 6.5. I know it's not a large market to get down a lot of action on, but I do think it's certainly worth picking off where you can.
Hopping over to the WNBA, the Storm and the Valkyries a little bit later tonight. Storm, big favorites on the road here, but you have some information on this Valkyries team.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty out there at this point, but it's a very interesting plot that's happened to the Valkyries, and I'm in love with fading the Golden State Valkyries right now. They've started off the season very well. They've had 4 wins right now, but they came into the season with an 8.5 as the win total. Right. So they've already secured half of it, and we're like maybe a quarter way through the WNBA season. But we really have to understand that a lot of their players, 4 key players on the Golden State Valkyries, are headed to Eurobasket. And Matt, what I think is so interesting is we have to start to wonder, why were these players even put up for their expansion drafts and not protected by their previous teams? We have another expansion draft coming in the WNBA next season when the Toronto Tempo entered the league. So a lot of the reason why some of these players were not secured by their former teams was because they knew that they were going to be left for Eurobasket at a portion of next season. So the Valkyries lose 4 key players and some of their best players who have a sum total of about half of their team total points per game. So I love fading the Valkyries in this spot. I just don't think they're at all the same team that they've been. So you're using the power rating on what they've been, but you're removing their best pieces. The Storm have started overachieving as of late. I think now is a good buy point on the Spurs. I mean, on the Storm. And given all of that, I love going to the win totals market on the Valkyries as well. There's an under 14.5 widely available. And to assume that this team gets 11 more wins in 3 quarters of the season without some of their key players, and then when you isolate the schedule, when are these players coming back? That's when the schedule gets so difficult. So it is just miserable sledding here for the Valkyries. A great time to fade what's been a nice start.
Interesting WNBA year. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, no, we're out of time here. Wish we had more time here with Mike. I'll give you one more WNBA play of his whenever we get on the other side here. Find his great work over at the Action Network at Fiddle Picks as well. He is Michael Fiddle. Thanks for the time today, man, and good luck on all your bets.
Of course. You guys as well.
Mike, I am actually going to play some WNBA, knowing that half of the players are have left and gone to play overseas.
That was a pretty good cap. I'm not going to lie. That was a pretty strong cap. It makes you want to play Seattle tonight.
How many WNBA bets have you made this year?
Big old goose egg.
Can we make it? We'll make our first one together when we come back.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Matt and Mike here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Rory McIlroy has wrapped up his round, Mike, and amongst other things that he said, they said, what do you look forward to tomorrow? And he said, hopefully around in under 4.5 hours and get out of here. So if anyone is wondering what his motivation is, it's to play fast and get out of there. I'm not saying that means bet against Rory. He's still one of the best golfers in the world, and he's prideful for sure, but it does not seem like he is incredibly happy to be there.
Well, I mean, it's a uber difficult golf course. He's not played wonderfully this weekend. We talked about the pace of play, too. I mean, we were talking 6-hour rounds on Friday. That is brutal for a major. Like, I get frustrated if I can't finish a round in 5 hours. I can't imagine being on the PGA Tour and having to be out there for 6 hours, especially in the conditions that they're playing in.
Yeah, it's just one of those. It's they're giving him such a hard time, and it's, I think he created this a little bit on his own because he was so available to the media for so long. And then when he does have a bad round now and he just would rather either leave or go practice or whatever it is or something, and he skips out on the media thing, everything, why are you leaving? What's going on? Oh, Rory, he's such a bad sport and all this. And it's like, well, I mean, you know, dude, he's upset. He had a bad round. He wants to go practice or just chill or get in his hyperbaric little chamber thing or whatever he's doing. But he's just, you know, he's moving on. But I think we've created that Rory is just almost owes it to us to like get out there and talk to us. And that's just not the case.
Well, you mentioned it. He was so readily available for so long that you're seeing the opposite side of it, and people get frustrated by it because it's he created the expectation that you would have these longer post-round interviews, that you consistently have him available for it. We didn't see him talk to the media after the second round. I understand where the media is frustrated, but he's also been one of those players that's given you more than a lot of players in the past as well. So it's kind of a give and take here.
Said that I was going to give you Michael Fittle's looks outside of what we just talked about earlier, which was the Storm as big favorites. He actually did also like the Mystics as dogs tomorrow. So if anybody wants to play that one, likes the Mystics as dogs. Mike, the Yankees and the Red Sox, talked about Carlos Rodon a little bit earlier in Bet the Cycle. One of mine was just him to have all strikeouts really, really high. Strikeout rate for him on the season at 31%, a little over 13% swinging strikes for him as well. This Red Sox team, yes, is over the last 2 weeks striking out more than any team in all of baseball. 25.7% for this Boston Red Sox team over the last 2 weeks. Lots of swing and miss in that lineup. So Carlos Rodon should have himself a decent day.
You would think so. And on the other side, we've got the Red Sox have Dobbins on the hill, a pitcher whose underlying numbers not quite as good as the current numbers. I like the Yankees here, specifically Yankees first five. You can lay the half run -125. I think Rodon has a good start. And I think the Yankees offense gets going here as well. So happy to lay the half run with the Yankees here first five -125, Matt.
Yeah, it is it's one of those deals with Rodon. I mean, every now and then, and the control will leave him, right? I mean, like every now and then the control leaves him, and then you get kind of one of those rough starts from Rodon that we banged our head against the wall about for so incredibly long. That said, you know, 9% walk rate this year is not great, Mike, but it's not like the worst either. So if you're going to get if you're going to have a 9% walk rate, you need to be backing it up with a 31% K rate. And that's what we're getting out of him right now. And so it hasn't really hurt him. The 2.87 surface ERA is backed up by the 3.16 XFIP and the 3.14 Sierra, the 2.69 XERA. So this is not smoke and mirrors with what we've seen from Rodon so far. He's legit. He's the real deal. And the walk rate, while you would like it to be lower, you can get away with it when you're striking out as many people as he is.
Yeah, you can. And that's the key. The strikeouts, the missed bats make it a lot easier to walk people and get away with it. We talked about the issues we saw with Flaherty walking people. He did not get away with those walks. He doesn't strike out as many guys. That makes it more difficult for a pitcher to be successful. But what we've seen from Rodon all season has shown he can be successful. He's walking a couple guys a game specifically because of those strikeouts. And as you've mentioned, this is a Red Sox team that does not mind striking out as well. So it's a very good matchup from that perspective for Rodon too.
So Padres and Diamondbacks, this is less of a play on the Padres and a more of a play against Zach Gallen. So I took the Padres as +130 dogs in this one, and I believe last time we looked, they were higher than that. So I have the worst of the number here in this one, I believe, when we looked. Yeah, up to 140 now on the Padres. So you can get a better number than I got. Mainly comes down to the handicap of Gallen. I think that this is priced on Zach Gallen over his career and not Zach Gallen in 2025. And so that for me, as long as we're getting at what I consider to be a little bit of a discount here, Mike, I mean, this is a guy that has been one of the better pitchers in baseball, one of the more consistent pitchers in baseball over the last 3 years. And Gallen just not getting that done so far this year. His K rate is down. His walk rate is up. His swinging strikes are down. His fly ball rate is up, which is allowing more balls to leave the yard against him. The 5.15 ERA is backed up here by, like, you know, four threes in the expecteds. And so he is over four ERA pitcher in the season so far. And again, it's not like he's terribly unlucky. It's a 260 BABIP against, as we know, league average is in the 300 range. And so Zach Gallen has not figured it out so far this year. It is only 14 starts for him. So maybe he figures it out, and maybe today is the day that he figures it out. But I'm going to take the plus money here on the Padres going up against a guy that is so far a much, much worse pitcher than he has been over the last three seasons.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any part of the handicap there. You are getting past Gallen numbers from a betting perspective, not the current ones and the stats that we've seen from him this year. I looked a long time at the over in this game, Matt. You can get over 9 minus 120 out there. You can get over 9.5 plus 100. We got Berger on the hill here for the Padres. He's started 2 games for them. The majority of his numbers that have brought his ERA down were when he was all in the bullpen. He gave 0 runs up in 4 bullpen starts, his 2 starts as a starter. He's walked 4 and he's walked 6 and struck out 6. And that's where his earned runs have come from. If you look at his underlying numbers, they're worse than what his overlying numbers are. He should have somewhere in a 3 ERA. I wouldn't be shocked if this Diamondbacks offense, which is very good, can get to him. And so I kind of like the over here more than specifically fading Gallen on his side. So I would lean toward the over 9, over 9.5 here if you were looking to get into this game.
2 late games today, the Guardians and Mariners, Tanner Bibee and George Kirby. Minus 137 on the Mariners at home with Kirby. It is plus 112 with Bibee on the road. Guardians dogs, a flat 7 there in that one, and actually juice towards the under, Mike.
Yeah, look, this is an interesting matchup. Specifically, the first 5, I think, is very interesting if you want to look toward the under. Bibee been very good, but doesn't go all that deep into games for this Guardians team. If you look at Kirby, coming off an outing where he had 14 strikeouts, but this Guardians team, one of the lower strikeout rates against righty pitchers this year so far. So I didn't want to go on the strikeout prop, especially coming off that number and against this Guardians team. Under 3.5 first 5 was the one I stared at a long time, Matt. I do think both of these pitchers have success against these offenses, but 3.5, a pretty low total there in the first 5. So I couldn't quite get to the window, but it would be under 3.5 first 5 or pass for me.
Yeah, unfortunately, the books look at the advanced stats, and you know, you and I love to look at these things and see if there's anything we can exploit. You look on the surface, and George Kirby might have one of the most stark contrasts between the expecteds and the surface stats that you're ever going to see. 6.53 ERA for Kirby with a 2.86 xFIP, a 2.85 Sierra, Mike. Like, we are talking 4-run differential between the expecteds and what we've seen so far from him. It's a small sample size. He's only made 4 starts as he gets back into ramping things up. He's also been dealing with a 358 batting average on balls in play against him, 58 points over the league average as well. So you look and you see, you would think, doesn't have to be today, but you would think positive regression is coming Kirby's way.
Yeah, I mean, you would expect, like, as you mentioned, all of the underlying stats significantly better, very unlucky in the balls and play aspect of this. So at some point that ERA is going to come down, and that is why we're seeing a 7 total with a guy with a 6 ERA, and we're getting money toward the under, because it's not just us. It's not just the books. It's everybody that knows about these advanced stats in baseball, and regression, both positive and negative, are inevitable in a lot of cases. It's when that regression comes, it feels like this is a pretty good day for that regression monster to start with this Guardians offense.
Yeah, we're looking here. I mean, this guy has a 28% K rate, a 4.5%.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, a 4.5% walk rate, and he's sitting with a 6.5 ERA, mainly because anytime anyone's hit a ball in the air so far, it's left the yard. 21.1% home run to fly ball ratio. That will come down. His career average is 9.7%. So it's literally twice as many balls are leaving the yard through the first 4 starts that get up in the air as usual. So again, George Kirby in for better days, no doubt about that. If you have not become a VSiN Pro subscriber, we urge you to go in and take advantage of the offer that we are giving you. It is $199 for an entire year. And with that, we're going to throw in Josh Applebaum's new book of NFL Sharp Betting Playbook. You get that at VSiN.com/subscribe. So not only do you get the discount on the yearly subscription, you get the daily best bets and the betting splits and all the video feeds that we have, the betting guides, et cetera. But you also get a copy of NFL Sharp Betting Playbook, VSiN.com/subscribe.
Set Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Final segment, Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Matt Brown and Mike Somich. Victor Hovland tees off, hits it out of bounds, has to take a drop and hit it off the cart path, and bogeys 1. And so with that,
honestly, not a bad bogey.
Yeah. So here we are with just two players now remaining under par in this tournament. And, you know, it's, I think maybe the door then could be open. You said that you liked it to be perhaps, you know, plus one. I'm not saying that that's out of the realm of possibility. Hovland comes back to even. Spahn would only have to play it two over today to be at even, you know, and then Sam Burns, certainly not out of the realm of possibility for him to play this course at over par, because, by the way, he did that in round number one. He played two over there in round number one. So could happen.
Yeah, I mean, the 65, unrepeatable. I think we can both agree on that with Sam Burns' second round. You've already got a bogey from Adam Scott. He's now down to one under. You've got a bogey from Ben Griffin. He is down to one under. So you only have three players at even par or better. And one of them is one hole into his round, and the other two have yet to tee off, Matt. I think one over may be the winning score here this weekend. We'll see if we continue to see the carnage that we're seeing. But it feels like the course also starting to play harder out there. As we've seen, a lot of the players that were three under, four under, they're coming back as well now, and we're seeing a lot more difficulty in scoring. You kind of look through it, and we mentioned there were nine players under par. I would be surprised if we are higher than that number right now, especially with the bogeys that we're seeing out on the course.
Yeah, Scotty goes back-to-back bogeys on 8 and 9, so he done so. Brooks Koepka was a popular name for people to say, like, oh, you should throw a Koepka ticket in. Throw a Koepka ticket in. He bogeys one and bogeys three. So he is two over through three holes. He is sitting at four over. And again, this is not to say that he's dead. He's got a ton of golf to play. But again, like, he did not come out on fire here. And so there's nobody to easily point to and say, like, oh, this guy's on fire. It's going to whatever. Like, that just hasn't worked out. I mean, Corey Connors was the guy that maybe you could have pointed at. You get through five holes with Corey Connors, Mike, and he was three under. And you're like, huh, could Corey Connors claw his way, like, you know, to even and then make this, you know, a something on Sunday? Bogey 10, bogey 11, double 14, and bogey 18 to finish 72 and two over for Corey Connors after starting the day at three under. So the course is playing tough yet again. I know people were trying to say, oh, it's not going to be that bad. No, it's playing tough yet again. It's going to be tough. This is kind of where we're at, right? I mean, three under might be the best round of the day, you know, on the course.
Yes, which we have I would agree.
By the way, we have no one. Leishman is in the clubhouse at two under. So there will at least be one 2 under shot today.
And he was 4 under at one point in that and struggled a little bit on the way home. 15, 16, and 18, three of the hardest holes on the golf course. Just a lot of carnage on the way in as well. And, you know, the live odds boards, it's reflecting this. You've got three guys under 10 to 1. Sam Burns, who's plus 260. JJ Spahn is plus 360. And Victor Hovland plus 650. They're the three under par. Well, two under par, and Hovland's even. After that, Scottie Scheffler is your next choice on the board at 18 to 1. Adam Scott at 20 to 1. John Rahm at 20 to 1. Hatton at 18 to 1. Ortiz at 18 to 1. So Scheffler, who's plus 5 right now, 8 back. Yeah. Your fourth choice, Matt.
Dare I say this is still anyone's tournament? Is that, and I mean, when I say anyone's, I mean like anybody at plus 2 or better?
I think if we end at plus 1, if I'm right about that, I think plus 3 is still in play. Like John Rahm at plus 3, he's 1 under today on the front. He's headed to the back right now. You get him at, what, 20 to 1? I mean, I don't hate that. He's the most pedigreed guy at that lower number, at that plus 3 or better. I mean, I guess Jordan Spieth you could make a case for. He's 2 under through 14 playing well, but he's got the tough part of the course left. Like, it's... I would take, if you gave me 100 Matt bucks, it'd be on Rahm right now at 20 to 1.
JJ Spahn does birdie and is a top ties. That being said, we have seen the early holes playing fairly easier, and then just gone to hell from there.
Gone south.
Remember, yeah. Morikawa was 2 under through 3 holes. He has now bogeyed 8 and 9. 8 and 9 seem like a very, like, two very popular bogey holes as we continue to see people coming out of 8, 9, 10 stretch with bogeys.
What do you make of Spahn? I watched him a lot in the first two rounds, specifically in the second round, because I bet against him in the second round. it seemed like he just was living with a four-leaf clover in his back pocket in the first round with all the scrambles that he had. But he hit the ball a lot cleaner in the second round, but then couldn't putt. He had 2-3 putts on the back nine. What do you make of him going toward the back half of this tournament?
Yeah, so I went back and looked at my models just to see if I overlooked him or something. He was never higher than 30th in any of my models. So I never even considered him, right? Like, I mean, it was never even in consideration for me. He putted the lights out in round one. That was not going to be sustainable, right? So you see he shoots 2 over yesterday because he came back down to earth. In round one, he gained 4.2 strokes putting. Round two.
He's not an elite putter.
No.
Like round, that, he's not an elite putter either.
Yeah. Round two comes back down to 0.8, and now you see him shoot 2 over, right? I think we're probably going to be somewhere in that range today unless he just gets ridiculously hot with the putter yet again, which can happen for the courses of entire tournaments. We've seen that before, Mike. Like, the reason I was just saying that about Sam Burns is because he actually is the best putter on the PGA Tour. So if he rode a hot putter to this championship, it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world because, again, he just putts better than everybody else.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, that makes sense. And this is these greens with how fast they are and how you have so many long putts and not three putting is a massive edge on these greens. It makes sense that your leading putter would be one of the guys who's up top. So Spawn and Burns 3 under through one here. No one else under par. What's the leader at going to tomorrow, Matt?
I will say no better than 2 under is going to be my guess.
I think both these guys come back some. I agree with you. I don't think you're going to see a 5 under going into tomorrow. I don't think you're even going to see a 4 under going into tomorrow. I think it's 3 under is the absolute lowest I think it could be going into tomorrow.
Let's get to our GBank best bets to make sure that we have everything recapped for you if you want to get stuff into your account. Mike, have the horses run already or do we still have that in front of us?
We still have that in front of us. So we can head over to Santa Anita first off, and we'll play a pick three here. So a three-leg parlay, essentially. We have to have the winner of the fourth race, the fifth race, and the sixth race. The two horse in the fourth and the two horse in the sixth, they're going to be very short prices. So we're trying to just create value around two favorites here. We're going to take the second shot on the board in the middle leg here. So pick three, race number four, Santa Anita, 2 with 6 with 2. So the two has to win the fourth, the six has to win the fifth, the two has to win the sixth. If that happens, hoping for around 10 to 1, somewhere in that range, Matt. Then Delaware Park, race number 9, the number 6, Kassar here. This is a horse that was very good on first asking, jumped up to the stakes level, went 2 turns, struggled, came back down to a lower class, was awesome again. Now trying stakes company. I think this is a very good fit in a weak field. So we'll go 6 to 1 here on the number 6 horse, Kassar, Delaware Park, race number 9.
Yeah, we got a bunch of baseball bets that we can run through here. Some of the games still to come with all of that. A quick reminder, we had Michael Fiddle on a little bit earlier. He likes OKC at 9.5. He also likes SGA over on his points, rebounds, and assists as well. Mike, a lot of baseball bets to talk through here.
Yeah, I'll kick it off with mine here. We got the Rockies and the Braves. I took the first 5 over 4.5 here. I want to go against Dolander. I want to go against Strider. I think both of these offenses have the advantage. Yes, even the Rockies offense today. So first 5 over 4.5 there for me and Rockies and the Braves. Brewers first 5 as well. Quintana on the mound pitched very well against the Cardinals. Like this Brewers team at home, you can get a -125 on the first 5 money line. I will lay a half run with the Phillies and the Yankees in the first 5. Both of those are -120. I think this is just massive pitching edges for both of these teams who also happen to have the better lineup. And then give me Hunter Brown over 7.5 Ks, +130 against the Twins. Hunter Brown been awesome. Strikeout rate been phenomenal. I think he keeps it going here against the Twins today. So over 7.5 Ks, +130 for me. You've got a couple money lines at plus prices, Matt.
I got the Padres at plus money, the Astros at plus money, played the Phillies on the alt run line at 1 as opposed to 1.5. Again, they're a home team, so wanted to take that out of the equation. I typically like to get all 9 at bats if I'm going to play a run line. So Phillies -1 alt run line, Padres at +130. You can get 140 now on the Padres play against Zach Gallen, and then the Astros as well. Going to bet on Hunter Brown here as a dog in that one, despite Joe Ryan being very, very good. We're going to give you the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSIN. Open a GBank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days. Deposit and play through $1,000 over at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll get $200 in cashback rewards on your Visa Signature card. You'll get a $100 deposit match at First Bet, and then we will give you a VSIN Pro subscription. That rounds out the trifecta there. VSIN.com/GBank, VSIN.com/GBank. It's a one-time promotion, limited customers opening a new account in response to this offer, and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. Stick around. Live Bet Saturday coming up after me and Mike here. Good luck on all your bets here on a Saturday.